This is great. How many people do it online? I need to be online. I'm not online. We have a lot of people online. Oh, I can't have people online. Sorry, everyone that's with us virtually. We are chatty, and a lot of work is going on before this meeting started. I could hear everything happening. So, give me just a minute. I'm going to join so I can see people a little bit better.
You guys hear?
Oh yeah. Fit, can you give me a thumbs up? Excellent. For those of you joining us virtually, we have a full house in person as well, so lots of excitement and things going on. We will welcome everybody to our fourth meeting of 2024. We have a relatively full agenda, so we'll move through that. I know a few people have to hop out before three, so we'll want to move as quickly as we can. Nicole, I need to be let in. Oh, sorry. So with that, I think just a reminder for those of you, it's the hottest ticket in the state right now is the One Utah Summit in rural Utah in Cedar City on the campus of SUU.
Are you going, Megan?
Heck yes.
I'll be there with you.
And if you want to hear me talk more, you can come to the Wednesday afternoon first breakout session. But yes, Monday evening, all day Tuesday, all day Wednesday. If you've never gone before, you are missing out. So good. Also, you'll want to get there and figure out where you want to be because there's more people this year, I think, than last year. It just keeps growing. So hopefully you have an opportunity to go to that. I'm just going to excuse Matt Lou from our executive team today. He's unable to make it, but I tease the executive team a little bit. Like, he's out working with counties to help us build affordable housing for Utah, so I said it was okay. He wasn't here today. So we'll excuse Matt today. And then with that, I think we will trying to decide where I don't want to go. We have a incredible board member that is retiring from the board, retiring from his job, and going on to his next steps. And Bruce Rigby, who is here in the corner, has been, Bruce has been on the board since I've been here. We did a little poll in our executive committee meeting to determine he's been here at least. So we think Gary's been here the longest, Deanna's the next longest after Bruce. So we think at least in this group before we had the state, Bruce was here for 14 years, but prior to that, he's been working in a board member role working with Northern Utah for the last 20 years. So he's been serving with us for a really long time. He's been a friendly and familiar face to me since I came as newbie 10 years ago, and we are very sad to see him go, but he has been a great member of the board and a huge advocate for the department, and we just want to wish him well and give him a huge round of applause. And anything you'd like to say?
You know, it's just been a wonderful experience. I've learned a lot to watch how ideas come and then they get implemented from a high level like this down to the actual rubber hitting the road where you actually help people is just inspiring. And each one of you plays such an important role, and everything that you do really does matter. And to be able to witness that through the recertification or whatever it may be that you can see is a really cool thing. So thank you for letting me have this experience and for being a part of it. I thoroughly enjoyed every bit of it and wish you all the best in every adventure you're doing in your life. Appreciate it.
Yay. And in true fashion, Bruce has potentially already found his replacement, which I'm so grateful for. So we'll be reaching out to that person as well, which brings me to a little bit more board business. We've had a lot of shifting. We have three people in the pipeline that are working to get approved by the governor's office. I think we missed the approval deadline by like a day because we moved our meeting, so they should be approved next week. But we have many more that we're talking to. But if you have anybody that you think would be a good fit, we would love to talk to you about them. One additional change, Dale Curtis, who's been on the board, I think for 2 years, hasn't been very long, but he's been such a good active member out in Moab. Is that right? No? Where was he? I thought it was in Moab.
Dale Curtis?
Yeah.
Yes,
where? Oh, Castledale. Okay, sorry. In the East Farm Estate. Sorry. He's doing well and thriving, which makes him a little too busy right now to be serving. I'm so sad to see him go. He's been such a good member of the board, has asked to step down just recently. So, again, looking for more members, but we do have some in the pipeline, but always want to grow and help. We were actually talking to the executive committee today about, I know we brag and we try to say Utah is the best, but actually we really are, especially when it comes to how we're functioning as a board and working with employers. Liz gets calls often from other states saying, how are you guys doing this? Why is it working? How come your board's working? So, and it continues to be good members that want to come forward and volunteer and help move this work forward. So, always looking for additions. The last thing I want to do before we get to the minutes is we had our service project that we do every year. This one was a little more on your own virtual service project than being here physically doing a service project. But if you'll recall, we decided to do kind of a food and money donation drive, and then based on that, we'll distribute whatever was earned throughout different areas of the state to the different food providers for those in different areas. But I just wanted to give you an update. If you want to, it's not too late. You can still Venmo Nicole if you want to donate, but we had a goal of £5,000, and we raised way more than that. We raised six, so this is department-wide. So I think you said board-wide, we were at about a little over $1,200 board-wise as far as donations go. But as far as the entire department combined with the board, we were able to raise over 6,600 pounds of food were donated, and then almost $8,500 in cash were donated, which tripled our goal to over 15,000 pounds of food. But actually, a lot of the food pantries are able to maximize those dollar donations, and so combined we were over $71,000 in donations for our drive, which is incredible. So thank you for everyone that supported. Thank you, Nicole, for helping initiate that and from your team. And that's just a lot. I'm just impressed with that. I think that was about 2 weeks, 3 weeks we put that up. So well done. So thank you for participating in that. If anybody has ideas for next year's service project, I'm all ears. And then with that, we need to approve the minutes. They're in your packet, the minutes from July 11th board meeting.
I'll make the motion to approve.
Thank you, Sean. I need a second.
Second.
Thank you, Michael. Any discussion on them all? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
You can raise your hand or thumbs up online. Any opposed? Okay, so moved. Thank you. I'm going to skip to the third bullet item before we pop up to the DOL. Review, but just we need to actually take some action. We were able this last quarter to certify the Clearfield Center and the South County Center. And I want to give thanks to those that were able to participate, in addition to the Clearfield office, but also board members. Tannen was able to be there. Is Tannen online? No. Tannen was able to be there. Sarah Jones was there. Jeremy Haslam was there. And Stacey Taylor was there. So thank you very much, board members, for going there. We do need to... Actually, is there anybody that wants to talk about that at all? Stacey, do you
want to talk?
I would love it. Okay, go for it. Tell us how it went.
It was wonderful. It was kind of neat because Jeremy and I joined the board actually at the same time. So we were the newbies, and Tana and Sarah had both been on recertification before, so they were kind of the veterans of it. So it was just really interesting to learn. For me, everything that, well, in my world, I've always just dealt with unemployment when it's dealing with Department of Workforce Services. But the one-stop shops are, you've talked about it, but they're just so much more. And it's really, it can be life-changing for people to utilize the services that they offer. So that was what I like learned from it. But it was a great facility there. Some great people, and they did a good job.
Excellent. I'm so glad you were able to go. I'm so glad you and Jeremy were able to go. Tannen and Sarah are veteran recertification board members. They really like to go, and they're great to.
Tannen tells you. It's kind of like those loops. And I was like, if I was the person, I'd be like, oh, no. That's pretty good.
Yeah, excellent. So would you mind, because I don't, Tannen's not here. No. And Sarah's not here. Would you mind making a motion? If you guys have, what we don't, Claire, I will pause on that in case someone else hops on. We can't. Sorry, Clearfield.
We
don't have a quorum.
Really?
It feels like we have a quorum. It's very close. Ready to vote when it's time, but we're not voting yet. But I believe Clearfield, you move the people that were there are going to make the motion to move forward. So we'll just pause on that for a minute. South County, which is here, was recertified in September as well. And Deanna was there, and Sean was there, and Sherry was there for that one. Would any of the three of you like to say anything?
I'll say something, but I'd like to defer to the other people.
You're also a veteran recertification expert.
Yeah, it was really wonderful to be here to see how things work and how one of the things that I think we mentioned as a committee and was very noticeable is how calm people were here because they knew they were going to be taken care of. And it was just a really wonderful experience. And it was a busy day. It was very busy, and they would spend time with each person and make the time to know what they needed and figure out exactly where they needed to be and make those warm handoffs or whatever they needed to do. But it was just really wonderful to see how well they worked here. So that was good. You guys had other great insights. So if you guys want to take a moment and share.
We had a wonderful opportunity. Certification that I attended before, we had the scenarios. This opportunity, we had the chance to actually mirror some of the folks that were surveying with people, and that was really eye-opening to see how knowledgeable they were, to see how comfortable they were in serving each and every person, no matter what the background was and where they came from. It was just really eye-opening to see that. It seems like there's a veil on the culture when people come to that door where they feel comfortable, they feel like they can ask questions, and it just seems like a really receptive environment.
That's great. That's so good. Sherry, anything? This is your first time, right?
Yep.
Was this your first time?
Yeah. And her and their staff were all really well prepared, and I also like the shadow aspect of that certification. I shadowed somebody who's only been here 6 months, and she was helping all types of programs and really patient and passionate and spreading just.
So I love what you said, Sean, about the mirroring, because first of all, I'm not good at role playing. And so when I have to try and role play when I'm in these, it's not great. Mm-hmm. So being in the moment with an actual, you know, dialogue and a person's situation is so much is more helpful. And I didn't tend to do role ones. So when you come here, when you come into this meeting, there's a line. Like there's a lot of people that are served here, a ton of people. And you just, I mean, you know that they have to know a lot of things because everyone coming in the door. So thank you so much. Do we have anybody else to hop on? Are we still not a quorum?
There's more.
Oh my goodness. It feels like we have a lot of people here.
Can I jump in on something?
Yes. Quick?
So we would do a part of the operations committee, but the next ones coming up are Metro. So Metro's coming up.
Who wants to join me?
And I might have a conflict, but I'm going to try to get there with you. Metro coming up, and what's the next one after that?
Just Metro.
Just Metro then.
Be in 2025.
And to Megan's point, there is a distinct difference between a rural employment center and an urban employment center. And then there's probably another difference between any of our urban centers and Metro as well.
When is the Metro?
November 13th.
13th.
No, she just moved. She can't. She wanted to.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to jump on Metro with me, this will be my first time at Metro. I'm pretty excited about it. So November 13th, look at your calendars and speak up. Email Tim or Nicole or me or whoever. And if we have somebody pop on before the end of the meeting, we will take action on both those certifications. If not, we will be sending an email out, so please watch for that.
And can I'm sorry, yeah. Megan, one more thing about Metro. We did make a suggestion. I could make it for the thing, Greg, that it might be good for if they go to Metro to go around the corner to the Resource Center as well as to tour that at Metro. For any of the board members who participated in, I think it's just another opportunity to see some of the other associated services that are there as well. Okay.
Remind me, is that what period of time?
It's like 9 to noon.
9 to 1.
Okay. 9 to 1.
That's fast.
I might. I'll let you know.
And plus, if you want to go over to the resources, that'll be a little extra. Because there's no way we can fit it in the 4 hours. That 4 hour flies.
Yeah.
You think 4 hours, but it's enough time.
The homeless resources.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody? 13th of November. It's going to be good. Okay. And that's all about one stops until we vote. Unless anybody has any other comments. So Metro will be the last one for 2024. And then we'll just start over again in January. And with that, we are going to turn the time over to Greg. He's pinch hitting very last minute, from some unforeseen scheduling things. So Greg is going to, and this is really cool actually. I'm excited to hear about this. The Department of Labor came to Utah to visit. And I'm just going to turn the power over him so he can tell us why and who was that.
So I'll be really brief. The people in the picture, but the goal is not.
We're working on it.
I know I'm like looking at the list.
Everybody
jump on real quick.
Okay, you're good. Picture. There you go.
Those are the people that were here. They were here 3 days.
They were right. Any questions?
She's our executive director, Casey Cameron. She had, like Megan said, a very, very last minute conflict that arose. So trying to figure out what I would say, I just started writing words on paper, and I'm not sure I know what I wrote. So if you'll just humor me. That's not her, is it? She just chimed in.
Okay, so we'll do this.
No, let's do that.
Okay. So I can feel you want a few more time to make your notes. Okay. All right. Stacy, any chance you want to make a motion to approve the Third Growth Center?
Yes, I would like to make a motion to approve the recertification of the Third Growth Field Center.
Perfect. I need a second. There's a, oh, thank you, Sean. Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. Congratulations, Clearfield. Now we need a motion. Yay, Clearfield! No, it takes a lot of work. A lot of work. But we appreciate that we get to come to it because it's very fun. So I need a motion for South County.
A motion for South County.
You have to do the whole motion, make it, oh, that's over.
I motion that we approve the recertification of South County American Job Center.
Oh, that's good. Very good. Wait a minute. Okay, thank you, Sarah. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. Congrats. And I need to read the minutes. Who did that motion? I can't remember. It was John. And then Michael, did you second it?
Yeah.
Okay. I need a new motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting in July.
Nice. Thank you. I need a second. Excellent. Any discussion? All in favor? Excellent. Thank you. So moved. No post. Anybody post? They weren't before. Great. Okay. We just roll with the punches.
All right.
Are you ready? Okay. Back to the picture.
I know. We put past it. We know who's here.
Okay, great.
So last week of August, our Department of Labor region, who's based in Dallas, up until that point, they have twice a year meetings, one based in Dallas, and then they like to get out across the states that comprise the region. And they had asked Utah if we were interested in hosting, and we like to show up. We're proud of what we do. So we, I don't know if we were volunteered or voluntold or both, but we were excited about the opportunity. So the last week of August, we had our regional overseer plus 11 states. And I'll dive into a little bit of the details, but the first thing we did with them when we had them in a room, we did a Do You Know Utah quiz. And I'm hoping you all pass it, so I'm not going to ask all the questions, but there were two questions in particular that had some interesting responses. Cahoots. So we did it on the phone, threw a question up there, everybody answered with their phones and see the responses in real time. And we had eight questions, and I'll give you two of them that elicited some interesting responses. I'll just tell you the multiple choice answers. The first was, or one of the first I want to share with you, the world's largest living organism in Utah, lives in Utah.
Yeah.
That's cheating. A grove of aspen trees, a T-Rex, a moose, or kelp mass in the Great Salt Lake.
Grove of aspen trees.
It's the aspen.
But most of them picked kelp mass. There's a reason I'm telling you. And then the other one that really tripped them up, we asked them, what is the official state insect of Utah? Multiple choice, in order, Mormon cricket, honeybee, grasshopper, ladybug. What do you think they picked? So we did that as kind of a fun little segue to warm them up. And then we had two full days of both tours and information sharing. And just a high level overview of the things that you could see behind me. The most interesting thing that people ask Liz and I all the time, we get called, tell us what your secret sauce is. And I want to brag, but we're really not special here. We're special in the event, in that we were given an opportunity more than a decade ago. And that opportunity allowed us to organize in how we deliver services.
It's
our organization built structure that others are prohibited from, others around the nation are prohibited from mimicking, that prevents them from duplicating us. But really what makes us special, quite frankly, is our people, our work ethic, the fact that we have had just tireless battles over the 27 years we've been a department of bringing together and establishing a single culture a single computer system. You are a fantastic board. And I'm not trying to scare you, but imagine going to a state with 10 of you and you all don't want to do, you boards all have your authoritative controls and you don't want to do the same thing. But you all have to duke it out, and all we are at Workforce Services in other states is kind of an overseeing body that provides money and funding and monitors contracts. That doesn't, to me, seem like an effective way, both from a fiscal perspective, but all things really at the end of the day, how does it effectively serve your citizens, support your employers, support your initiatives? So we are really, really happy with the model we have. I hear states like California and Texas just the massive size. It really, really is scary. They can't understand how and why we do what we do. So a couple of the bullet points we can see up there. We took them on a tour. We wanted them to see what we do. So we took them, we're calling it a refugee center. That brick and mortar structure off of North Temple is our refugee center, but it's also under the same roof houses our, one of our state office, vocational rehabilitation sites. It's an affiliate site. And we walked them around and they can't wrap their head around why it just seems so natural for us. Our leadership knows the staff. The staff knows the leadership. Our leadership and staff know the programs. They know the policies. We had our division director there leading the tour. He answered a myriad of questions about like minutia, performance outcomes, funding. He answered a parking lot question, for goodness sakes. I mean, just things that other states can't even wrap their heads around. I kind of touched on this a little bit. The integration of workforce services, it is a national model. They ask us all the time, how do you do what we do? We have a singular computer system. Our divisions have singular computer systems that talk to each other. If those computer systems didn't talk to each other, that citizen is coming in and having to talk to four and five different people. We want our systems to do the talking. We don't want the people to have to tell stories over and over. I see some of our eligibility staff in the back are going to talk to you here shortly. Imagine them finding out that somebody got a job and not being able to talk to the workforce side of the Department of Workforce Services about getting that job. And putting the onus on the job seeker to go tell multiple people. One, that's problematic. It's problematic for the person who's got to take public transportation and potentially go to two different buildings with kids in tow on a bus system. And if they don't share that information, now they may inaccurately receive benefits. Now they have overpayments they got to pay back. Just, it boggles my mind that it's so unnatural for us. We take for granted just how streamlined our services are. That also benefits the way we serve employers. If you're an employer, you deal with one person in your community, and that person helps set up the way you are served for the entire state. You're not having to, South County and Clearfield, you just serve by two sites. What if you are an employer and you want to hire both in Davis County and in Salt Lake County? You don't have to talk to two people. Heck, you can do it yourself. You do it online. They can't do that in other states. Like I see Scott, did I see Scott in here? Scott Romney, they haven't even gotten to the point where they can consider an apprenticeship commissioner, for goodness sake. So I really am proud of what we do here. Our unemployment insurance system has been a model since we took it out of the offices and centralized it as a just completely foreign concept in 1997 when we formed our department. It has been a national model for 27 years. States that went insolvent throughout the pandemic didn't apply to us. It's a fantastic model. We think of it just so natural. We train our staff when workload is low over here. We'll do more of this where it's high. Just really, really natural. Seems like a common concept. We can only do that because they're Department of Workforce Services employees under one common administration, one common cost structure. Other states who don't do that, where they're very, very siloed. When workload gets low over here and high over here, they have to either pay people to not be busy and drown over here if they don't have budget, or they have to lay people off and then go hire over here. Just let that sink in. Doesn't that just seem not very efficient? Fraud protection, fraud identity control. A fraud protection and identity protection is something that Utah does that is cutting edge. Our unemployment insurance staff, I gave a presentation to these 11 states, and they didn't even know how to wrap their head around what they were hearing, because it's just so fantastic. We get out in front of it. We don't want to issue payments and be the greatest bill collectors. We want to stop the payments from going out in the first place. Final thing I'll just tell you, the WIO reauthorization, it is likely to, it's anticipated to happen under the next administration, regardless of party. And we, Liz and I are very vocal about things we like and don't like, Nicole as well. And since you're talking about Metro, sir, we had Senator Romney's staff were in the state of Utah 3-4 weeks ago. And they said, we're here. We just want to see this. We can't wrap our head. We represent Utah, and we hear from our colleagues elsewhere, and they don't understand what you do, and we just don't quite understand. Can you just give us a tour? So Liz was working offsite. If you haven't been to the Metro Employment Center, it's one of our only two-story employment centers. It's got an over a balcony. You can kind of look down into the lobby. So I met this particular gentleman there. We just stood upstairs. And I just said, watch. And it wasn't, and I could control, walked in and said, okay, what do you think that person's doing? And he, this gentleman was repeating words that he thought he'd seen in Florida or seen in North Carolina. And no, that person is being screened and being triaged for all services. First of all, they're being seen as if they have veteran connections. Now they're being screened to see if they have an immediate appointment. Now they're being screened. See, they're going in that room to develop a resume or to have the possibility for temporary assistance. So what questions do you have? I don't really even know where to begin. Legitimately, they hear about it. They hear about the Utah model, but quite frankly, they don't understand it. And I felt bad because I didn't think it was a big deal. I mean that as a compliment to our staff, but it just seems so natural to us. I could not imagine, and I use that example of a single parent, kids in tow, getting on a bus, going to downtown Salt Lake, and I'll make it up to Metro, and then having to get on a different bus to come here to apply for food. And it just, that doesn't seem very efficient. So with that, I think we did a really eye-opening job, so much so, no big egos unpunished. A different set of Tuesdays are coming in. First week of December, they have spent another week here. Liz and I just got contacted today. Another state in the South wants to spend a full day interrogating us, so.
You guys are going into the consulting jobs.
To be very honest with you, there was a consulting agency, a consultant representing a state just about 2 weeks ago that asked for our feedback, and we just couldn't make it work with our schedules, but honestly, what I think we were thinking is you want us to tell you so you can go tell that state, but if we remove you and we just go talk to that state, hey, here's the money. Incidentally, that is one of the states that is looking to come in December, and they are looking to bring a very large contingency, including some legislative leadership from that state.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yay.
No, it's not a yay. Anyway, I'm up here being the voice and representing and telling you all what happened, but it is absolutely not me. It's our staff. It's our, not only the folks you see here in these buildings, but quite frankly, Liz, tell me if I'm lying. The first thing I tell every state, if you don't have a strong finance team, there's not a chance you're pulling off a workforce services. Because we put all our money in a blender, we push blend, and we just go. We train our staff, we don't care about programs, serve people. We deal with that junk on the back end, reporting. But our finance staff, they gotta pull every dollar out of that goo, turn it back into a dollar, because they have to report on it. So you gotta have to have a strong finance group. We have over 100 finance sources. Fiscal sources that go into that blender that have to be deconstructed. So that is, if we really tell the truth, that is our secret sauce, having strong financial background and strong leadership. I mean, you've met our service area directors, you know that they get out into the communities. We don't do it, government doesn't solve the problems alone. It takes the support of the communities. It takes us knowing what's going on the ground in the local areas. One state did ask us, so I want to maintain control in a local area. Well, you really don't. we all work together, but once we decide a way to do it, you can't have the, Zach's looking at me, so you can't have the Blanding way and the rest of the state way, because then you defeated the purpose of having a singular pathway. But Zach's going to weigh in on the creation of statewide policy to ensure that we can address the needs of the community in Blanding as well as the rest of the state. So with that, I'll take any questions or I will stop talking. Gary did ask how we stand with the Department of Labor. Unfortunately, I think we stand pretty good because that's going to keep coming.
That's a great report. I'm really sorry, kind of. I'm sorry. I mean, it's a great report. I guess it's a good problem to have, the other states looking
for. Was looking for a little bit today. Did we miss anything? Yeah. Want to share?
No. You hit it.
No questions?
We're getting pretty good at our little spill. Done it a few times now.
Great. That's very cool. Very cool. No questions? Any questions online?
Kenny, my favorite story to tell just because it's fun.
Yes.
Once they can't get past this, and so I just did have a bad mood one day, I said, you have no way to be DWS. Don't call us again. They're arguing this is not made up. I won't tell you the state. Might be in the Great Lakes area. I can tell you which one. They're arguing still about whether they're going to require the people to be blue ink or black ink.
Oh,
so not joking. I'm just saying you're not ready to, you haven't gotten to the point where you're going to take two administrators and tell them we only need one of you. That's what having a siloed organization to bring them together means. You don't have two Executive Director Casey Cameron's, two Executive Director Gary Harder's. You have one. You're collapsing. So when they're still arguing about blue and black, I don't know that they're ready yet to focus on the customers, focus on singular policies, focus on streamlined service delivery, focus on blended funding. This was their major hang-up. Welcome to Utah. We really do.
We are
proud of what we do. Thanks for your time.
Well done,
Greg. Well, yay! Yeah. With that, we have the next item on the agenda. Thanks, Greg. And you did a great job just stepping in at the last second.
Mormon cricket.
We have kind of an info update. Keep us in the know of what's going on with SNAP employment and training, the training state plan. And I think we have Chantel here.
We have Jennifer.
Oh, they're online. Jennifer and Ashley in the back. And Chantel is on virtually. And we're going to turn the time over to them. For those that don't have their acronyms right in front of you, I can't remember what SNAP stands for. Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It used to be like, it's a lot of words. It doesn't fit on the agenda. It's more than 8.5 inches. But food stamps is a good way to think of it. And then, yeah, with that, I'm just going to turn the time over to you. I'm also going to get out of the way because I just feel like I'm in the way.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks for having us. Like Megan said, I am Jennifer Reynolds. I am a program manager in our Eligibility Services Division, so I help oversee SNAP.
And I'm Ashley Davis, and I am a SNAP program specialist. So, and I do oversee the ENT program, the implemented training program that we're discussing.
Yeah. And we are joined, like she said, online by Chantel Roberts, who is our assistant director. So we just recently submitted our state plan of operations to USDA FMS and it got approved. So we wanted to come out and explain to you what our implement training program is, just to give you a little more information.
Can you tell them what USDA and FMS stands for?
Yeah. State Department of Agriculture, FMS Food Nutrition Services, who oversees the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. They also do the Child Nutrition Program, so CNP programs and other innovative heads. So we can go to the next slide. So one of the things that we have in our SNAP program, so when individuals apply for benefits with us, when we interview them, we're looking at the household, the applicants, we are reviewing employment and training. The purpose of this program is to lead to self-sufficiency. So we're trying to connect these individuals with avenues to help lead them to self-sufficiency in the future, which comes through job connections, as we know. So we really partner on this program with Workforce Development Division and our employment counselors to look at ways that we can connect these individuals in their local communities to jobs that can lead to self-sufficiency ultimately for them. So it is really about giving them skills, training, and work experience.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's meetings like this and other meetings that are attended that we can learn the current labor market trends, future forecasting to better help these customers. Again, like she said, it's really the Eligibility Service Division that facilitates the referral, but it's our partners with WDD, the Workforce Development Division, that they're employment counselors that are really hands-on working with these clients and providing that information to help them gain self-sufficiency. And I think Greg really hit the nail on the head when he said, you know, we have awesome relationships here. And so we're so grateful for the work that they do, because they do the majority of this for helping our clients.
We can go to the next one. So who needs to participate in this program? We're looking for individuals who are unemployed or underemployed and they don't have any barriers to employment. So there's a few things that we're looking at, right? Maybe the community that they live in, there's not a lot of different opportunities, so we wouldn't necessarily send them down this avenue. We would encourage them to utilize other services through WDD. But we're just looking to determine who is a good fit, because again, we want them to meet towards self-sufficiency. And if this isn't a time in their life, if they're dealing with some outside pressures or other issues, then this isn't a time for them to do this program, but there are other resources we can refer them to. And so we do discuss that with these individuals at every application and at every renewal for benefits, which is every 6 months that we look at for the SNAP program. So we review that information with them. So some of the requirements, we do have them register just on our webpage at jobs.utah.gov. They do an assessment, and through that assessment, we're able to gather what's their education history, right? Is there anything there that we need to look at, whether it be GED or adult education classes? They have any training certificates, as well as what is their experience with interviewing, resume building, anything that they could use services with. They fill in through that, and that's part of the online evaluation as well.
So after they do the online evaluation, they do attend a virtual workshop. So they're notified of the date and time that this will be required. They can't attend at that time. They just reschedule. At that time, they also meet with the employment counselor. We have currently 3 employment counselors that handle all of our employment and training customers. And they will be assigned the employment counselor, and that one employment counselor will kind of help them through the entire process. And they are required, one thing that all of the customers are required to do, the clients, is to complete 48 job contacts. Also any mandatory workshops that they may have, and those workshops are kind of tailored to them according to the questions that they answered that were addressed on the evaluation. So it's not going to be the same. It's not one size fits all for everyone. And then we do require that it is completed by the end of the 3rd month of the referral.
Yeah, so it's a 3-month process. Every month they can qualify for a $50 spend just to help with costs. Because we understand that maybe coming into an office or completing job searches online, there is a cost associated. So these individuals do qualify for a little work reimbursement for that. It's just, again, to highlight the goals that we have for this program. If an individual participates, we don't look at participation again for another year, because the hope is that through this 3-month period where they get that close working relationship with the employment counselor, the job searches, that they're able to find a job, and that will lead to some self-sufficiency for that household. We look at forecasting trends, as Ashley mentioned earlier, with the employment counselors to help encourage them to job needs in their area, as well as hoping that these individuals are building confidence through this process to maintain work relationships and be able to stay in the market. So I don't know if you guys have any questions for us about this program or the services we provide.
Why 48?
It's just the standard that we have. It meets some of the requirements as well that we have to meet.
What was the question? Sorry, there's the one noise.
48 jobs.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Do you have any stats on how many they actually become employed after they've gone through that process?
So, 30%?
Yeah, currently it's approximately 30% of the people.
And our referrals, they vary, right? Again, we're looking for quality referrals, but those can be maybe 150 a month. So, but again, as we're working with them, sometimes these barriers come up that we're not aware of initially, which is why it's so critical that we work so closely with the counselors on that.
Yeah, and I would also like to add that sometimes the statistics there are a little bit off, just considering a lot of times they may get these services, they may have help with their resume and everything, but not have a job immediately when they finish this program, that those skills still help them for 2-3 months down the road, when we're not necessarily tracking those numbers. So it's still something that's very beneficial, though we might not have the exact.
So in 4 months, it could be 45%.
Exactly.
Any other questions? I think it's such a good example and segue for what Bryn was just talking about,
yeah,
about our ability to streamline services. And our goal is obviously not to have people in this program, right? It's to help them get off as soon as they possibly can through the help of other services that we provide.
And Utah is very unique because we do it in-house. We call it like our in-house. So many other states, they outsource and they have partners that they work with, but we're so fortunate to have WDD and the partnership that we have there and be able to work with them. They've been incredible, and honestly, this program just wouldn't exist without them and the counselors there. So,
the scenario you painted about the mom with the four kids going to try and figure out how to get a job and then going downtown to go try and get, you know, her ability to probably like a debit card, I think, all right, to get food. And having to go to a completely different place with hungry kids in tow and, you know, that kind of stuff is on public transportation.
Yeah,
exactly. Hey, any other questions?
Thank you for coming. We love to get, like, reminded and informed on this kind of stuff so we can see all the pieces.
Well, we might return next year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next thing is the Open Door campaign. The department recently launched a campaign to help maybe just educate the public. I mean, we're educating ourselves on what happens. We're trying to get that out to more people. So with that, I'm going to kind of turn the time over to Nicole and let her kind of show us how the department's trying to do that.
Yeah, so kind of like she mentioned, we have so much within the Department of Workforce Services, right? And so it can be a little confusing for someone to know what exactly the services are that they can receive.
Can I just interject with that for a minute? Especially if they're moving from out of state, where they've been in the state, yet they had to hop to a million different places. And so I think that's a key point, too, because we know the amount of people that have come into our state, the services that they may have been or any of their family members have been accessing aren't like ours, and so it's a little bit different. But go ahead.
No, for sure. So as part of that, I mean, I think that's been some of the common feedback that we have heard is that people don't know about some of the services available from the Department of Workforce Services. So we launched a campaign with a new website called mydoorway.utah.gov. So that this is the website that's up right now, and we've kind of done an awareness campaign, so you might see some of this pop up on social media or see, I think I saw it on tracks. There was like a wrap up. Yeah, and on buses as well. Movie theaters.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did. And Mega Parks.
Yeah, I did.
So if you go to see a movie, you might see a little bit about DWS as well.
Right.
And so as part of this, we kind of have like a little video I thought would be helpful to show that's kind of one of the items. So we'll watch that.
During your life, there are times when going through the right door could make all the difference. Some may temporarily help you pay your bills. Others may help you put food on the table or lead to a new job. When you're not sure where to turn, the right doorways can help you move forward in life. Find your doorway to new opportunities at the Department of Workforce Services.
You probably did, yeah. So you might see a little video of the Megaplex. I think it's kind of where they're being shown. It's also available in Spanish, so this information is available in Spanish as well. So in the program, they kind of come up here and it asks what they can get assistance with. And so based off of what they're selecting, so if I was like, hey, I want to get child care assistance, it's going to redirect to our child care assistance page that has in a little easier to digest format, I guess, of what those services are. And kind of walk through how someone could apply for that assistance or access that assistance and what some of the qualification requirements are. And if they click on any of these, it'll then redirect to this tab. It'll direct back to jobs.utah.gov to the information under our website. So it's just a little easier way for them to know to get connected to the right spot. Since we have so much information there, and trying to find it can be a little tricky sometimes. So again, there's just a lot of really cool information, so I'd encourage you to check it out. Maybe like on the website. Sorry, it looks like there might be a hard time. Can you guys hear online?
There it is. Okay. Sorry.
What's is it was it, fine and then all of a sudden.
Just since the video.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. Great. No more videos. Sorry. Oh, the owl can only handle so much. But as you can see down here, there are tiles for different sections. So folks can also just come here and click on a different one of these tiles. Again, it'll take to one of those pages. But you can kind of see we offer quite a bit. So it's just like a good way to get a quick snapshot on the services we provide.
And that's really what we want to emphasize here. Our website is, I'm sorry, I'm yelling for you. Vic, I'm yelling for you. This is being based not on our divisions. It's not, we're not linking you to our workforce development division or our eligibility services division. This is coming at it through the lens of a citizen in our state through the service lens. So you can see food assistance, child care assistance, Medicaid assistance. Those would be eligibility services division, but we're not expecting citizens to know what ESD or eligibility services means, but they do know I have a medical need. So this is a different approach that we're trying to come at it through the lens of those we serve. And again, Utah being unique, if you were in a different state and you wanted to launch something like this, each local board would put their own flair on it. And I used 10
using blue ink.
Stop. Yes. I'm blueing at this. Yes. 100%. Good job. You're hired. So I just want to emphasize a service-oriented approach through the doorways to orient people as to what we offer here at our department was the concept. We don't miss.
Awesome. Any questions on this?
This is really cool. And we said the link, what is the link?
Yeah, so it's mydoorway.utah.gov.
We can send the link out with the minutes as well. So you can click on it.
Do we have, do you have, what's the more plan for launching? Like, do you have, is it working? How much more are we doing this? How much investment are we putting into it? It's too early. We don't know that, Megan. We'll tell you
later.
Okay. I mean, we did just launch this, so I don't think we 100%
know. No. Okay.
It's only been going like that. Y'all need to get to the movies, apparently. I barely go to the movies, and I saw, so you guys need to go to the movies.
Are you talking at all about, like, if it's successful in being an app? Versus just
so all of our web pages and even the application are mobile friendly. So even though we might not have an app, we've really tried to make sure and maximize that all of the services are mobile friendly. So someone that could come on and apply for assistance would be in a mobile friendly version of it and have it be a little more easily accessible with that.
We do have some apps that have functionality though. We do have a job seeker app where they can go out and it kind of tells you jobs around you. So we do have some of the functionality for some of our services in apps, but I don't think there's intention for this to be in an app.
And the look on the phone is great too.
I mean, it's good.
Good.
And I'm just saying, I just typed in the doorway and it came up number one.
This is intended to get them back to the native site where they can actually launch into applications. But if we find that this gateway, as we find the success of this particular approach, we could look to modify the native site, the jobs.utah.gov. So this is more, for lack of a better term, it's our sandbox right now.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Any other questions? Good response for that. Okay. Now, it's time for our annual public meeting training. And Kevin, listen, I'm really excited about this, but this is the third time I've had this training in the last 3 months, so I'm super confident about this training, which tells me that I'm in public meeting service too much. So we're very excited. So I could get the training. Just kidding. So we're going to turn the time over to Kevin for our public meeting training because it is required. It is the law, and we have to do it, and we're excited about it.
Yeah, well, for what it's worth, my pen ink is a burgundy color, so that other state is like going to melt mines and whatever other state that is. So. Anyway, my name's Kevin. You might remember me from last year when I was here. I'm a staff attorney at DWS. I'm normally hanging out with the USOR folks, but you're stuck with me today, so.
Glad to have you.
So my approach when I do this training is it's up to the staff to kind of be the guardrails and make sure that this board is complying with requirements of the Open Public Meetings Act. So my job today isn't to make you all experts and get into like all the weeds and all the intricacies. What I am doing is kind of giving an overview and kind of alerting you kind of like important things so that way you can at least ask the right questions if something comes up, if there's an issue, like say maybe we have a quorum where you can vote on things like that. There have been a few changes since last year, nothing substantive, just a few little details that have changed with the requirements since last year. So I'll let you know about those. The way I divide up this training, I'm going to give you a couple of definitions, and then I'm going to talk about stuff that needs to happen before the meeting, stuff that needs to happen during the meeting, and the stuff that needs to happen after the meeting. And that's going to be the training. So let's move to another slide. Yes, that's it. So if there's one thing you remember from this training, it's the whole point is to do the business of the public in public. That's really what it's about. So we take actions openly and we deliberate openly. This is so the public knows what we're up to and what we do and why we do it. So the default option is meetings are open to the public. There are some very rare exceptions where they get closed. We'll talk about those. But this is kind of the why. Let's go to the next slide. So you'll hear me talking about like public body. So this means like any like board, commission, committee, council, whatever the name is, it basically means any like administrative body that's created by statute or rule has two or more members, expends public revenue or is supported by public revenue and makes decisions regarding the public business. So this board is a public body. And just FYI, you're created by statute, if anyone cares. You'll hear something. There's also the Open and Public Meetings Act talks about something called specified bodies. That's not you. Don't worry about it. Next slide. So, meetings. So we're going to talk about what a meeting is, because the meeting is kind of important, because it needs to be, because you need to be in a meeting to take any official actions or discussions or anything like that. So, meeting, gathering of a public body with a quorum. Quorum means a majority of the members. To discuss, receive comments, or act on a relevant matter. Relevant matter means within the scope of the public body's authority or advisory power. That's really it. So one thing that's changed slightly is they kind of, in the past, we kind of talked about chance and social gatherings with you are not considered meetings. The idea is like, say, majority of you decide to go to dinner after this meeting. That's not a meeting. But majority of you decide to go to dinner after this meeting to discuss matters relevant to the board, then yeah, you just set up a meeting. So the point though is they kind of focused more on with the definition of meeting. Like the purpose of the gathering is kind of more important than rather who's present. So anyway, keep that in mind. Let me go to the next slide. So we already talked about this a little bit. Default setting, meetings are open to the public. One thing that's new, and to me this seemed like we already knew this, but they said, you know, I guess we had to put this in statute. So a quorum of a public body may not act together outside of a public meeting to predetermine an action. And I think the point is, like, compliance is more than just, like, checking the boxes. Like, you need to do like the full deliberation in the public meeting. Kind of the same thing with like, I don't remember from a couple of years ago with like members of the public body like sending like texting or sending like instant messages to each other during a meeting. Like the idea is like if you got something to say, then just say it in the meeting. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Notice. Now we're getting into the stuff that needs to happen before the meeting. So basically, and the point is that having a public meeting is kind of useless if people don't know when the meeting is or where the meeting is. And so the idea with notice is we give the date, the time, and place where the meeting's going to be, and if there's an electronic option to attend, then how you attend electronically, like the link to like the Zoom or the WebEx or whatever. And the agenda, so people know what the meeting's going to be about. The magic number here is 24 hours. So we have to give a minimum of 24 hours before each meeting. That's, when you think about it, that's kind of a low bar. So there's no reason to not do that. Now, if the public body has, like, regular meetings, like they meet every quarter or whatever, then every year we post a notice of all the scheduled meetings for that year. Let's move on to the next slide. One thing that's like kind of new, I think this was in 2023. So there's two kind of how you give notice now. There's kind of like two kinds of notices. The one that applies to this board is going to do what they call the Class A notice. And there's kind of two things we have to do. We have to put notice of public meetings on the Utah Public Notice website. The other place we publish the notice is on the agency website. So this board has a website. Sorry, I have the State Rehabilitation Council website up there. But you do have your own website. So you have a website that's on the UWS webpage. So we post notice there. There is a third requirement that doesn't apply to this board, but the act does talk about affected areas. But for a public body where the affected area technically is like the whole state, then that probably doesn't matter. Basically, like if it's a smaller area, like a municipality or like a service district or something, they have to post notice in the affected area. But like I said, we're statewide, so we don't need to worry about that. All right, next slide, the agendas. So again, this is the idea is to, so people know what the meeting's about. The agenda is also important for us because you can only take action on agenda items. So topics need to basically have enough information so people know what you're going to talk about. Each topic is an agenda item. And like I said, you cannot take action on an agenda item that's not on the agenda. The one thing that kind of comes up is, with the discretion of the chairperson, the public may raise an item to be discussed. Now, we still can't take any action on it. But if someone brings up something, hey, what about this? And important talk about it. Just can't do anything with that until you schedule the next meeting. I think that's it. Let's move on. So, errors. So, this is kind of important that... So if we forget to put an agenda item or we have like the wrong location or time for the meeting, some sort of mistake, some sort of clerical mistake with our agenda, and we don't discover it before the 24 hours notice requirement kicks in, you're stuck with that agenda. So if something, you put something that you're going to vote on, it's not on there, sorry. You're going to have to wait till the next meeting. So yeah, you can't fix an agenda once we're within 24 hours of the meeting. That's kind of the takeaway. So let's move on to just quickly about this, like emergency meetings. This is like the one time where you don't have to comply with the 24 hour notice. So I've worked for the state 10 years. I probably advised like over a dozen public bodies. I've seen this happen once. So very uncommon, but it is an option. If there's ever a, because of unforeseen circumstances, something that really can't wait to comply with the notice requirements. So something of an emergency or urgent nature, you can have an emergency meeting. The majority of the board members must approve the emergency meeting. And on the agenda, you need to explain why this was an emergency, why this couldn't wait for to do like the proper notice. And then we still have to do our best efforts to comply with the notice requirements. And then just one thing is, this is actually in the law, but it should be. So if you're in an emergency meeting, you can only take action on what was the emergency or urgent matter to justify the meeting in the first place. All the non-emergency agenda stuff can wait until the next meeting. So like I said, the one time I saw this, like that meeting was literally like 5 minutes. They opened the meeting, they voted on one matter, closed the meeting. That was it. So, all right, let's move on to stuff during the meetings. So these are where there are certain circumstances where a public body can close a meeting. There's even sometimes where they are required to close the meetings. I don't think any of the required to close the meeting things are going to apply to this board. And I think the ones where a public body may close a meeting, highly unlikely they're going to apply to this particular board, but some of the reasons meetings can be closed, if you're discussing character or competence or health of an individual, like pending litigation, deployment of security, sometimes if there's trade secrets involved or evaluating bids in a procurement process, those are reasons you can close the meeting. But the key is you need to point to something in the Open Public Meetings Act that says you can close the meeting. And if you're going to close the meeting, to vote by 2/3 majority, and the reason for the closure needs to be in the minutes. Just as a reminder, no action to be taken in a closed meeting. In fact, the only vote you can take is to end the closed session. And just one little tip, make sure you're only discussing the topic for why you closed the meeting. I've seen this happen sometime where, you know, the meeting gets closed and, you know, board members start talking about whatever things, and the topic, there's kind of like topic creep, and then pretty soon you're talking about other stuff. No, just keep it focused on why you close the meeting. I think that's it, so let's move on. So this is the after meeting stuff. All right, that's kind of during meeting too, because we should do it during the meeting. So basically, we need to keep a record of the meeting. There's going to be kind of a audio, video, audio thing component and a written component. So basically how it works is the entire meeting gets recorded. Even in closed session, that part still gets recorded with one exception, is if the meeting's closed to discuss the character and confidence or health of an individual or discuss security deployment, that is the one time you can turn off the recorder. And when you do, the chairperson has to sign an affidavit saying, like, hey, we're going to turn off the recorder because we were talking about, you know, security deployments, whatever. So that's the only reason we stopped the recording. But otherwise, we don't really edit it or anything, so recording is a public record with the exception of the closed part of the meeting, which is a protected record. Protected record means no access unless there's a court order for it, basically. Yeah, so let's move on. So the meeting minutes. So we have to just keep a record of what happened. So it's going to include things like date, time, place, and names of the board members' presence, actions taken, and votes that and how people voted, names of any persons who commented or presented, the substance of the comments, including public comments, and then also any, like, records used or presented. So, like, this lovely PowerPoint presentation here is part of the record for this meeting. So minutes, as no surprise here, minutes get approved, generally get approved at the next meeting. Kind of the numbers here, audio recording posted within 3 business days of the meeting, any minutes 30 days after the meeting. Once the minutes have been approved, we have 3 days to post the minutes. Again, any part of any minutes from a closed portion of a record is not public. So edits to the minutes. So short answer is we can correct clerical errors. We can't change votes or comments made. So no backsies on your votes. And then, yeah, I think that's it. So our next slide, I'll just talk quick about electronic meetings. So we know, so a public body may approve electronic meetings, and the requirement is we adopt like a resolution or a rule, and that authorizes having electronic meetings, and we have to have an anchor location. The idea is like if someone still wants to show up in person, there's a way that they can do that. Usually it's where the public body holds its meetings. There is a rare exception, like if we have like another pandemic or something, then where it might not be safe for people to get together, then, you know, then we're required to have an anchor location. But generally, we have to have an anchor location. Then next slide. The enforcement, I kind of hate this slide because it's kind of a downer, like the, I should probably reorganize it, that slide. But anyway, but the point is to emphasize here, why we do the training and why we take the compliance seriously. Because I don't know if you ever, like, occasionally times, like, in the news, you'll read about, like, some council or committee out there and they didn't comply with this. And it's a mess. It's dumpster fire. So we want to stay away from that because if we don't follow the act, then actions can actually be voided. Closed meetings can actually be open. Like, records in the closed meeting can be open and records discussed. If someone has to sue us to comply, then they can get attorney's fees. And if anybody is, like, willfully trying to violate this act, it's a Class B misdemeanor. So anyway, that's none of that's fun. So luckily, that's why you have staff like us to help, you know, Nicole and I to help you avoid any of this unpleasantness. But,
like reapproving the minutes.
There you go.
Yes. There we go. And I think we have one last slide. Okay, we don't have to end on this. Okay. This is starting to get a little bit out of my lane, but just one thing about disruptive behavior. You can get people out of meeting for, I think the way the statute reads it says it, something if someone is willfully disrupting the meeting, and to the point where it's like, or like it's this orderly conduct is compromised, then you don't have to tolerate disruptive behavior. But just some ideas, like explaining procedure in a meeting is always a good idea. I think sometimes, you know, we get used to this kind of like procedures and requirements stuff. Public doesn't. And so I think sometimes we forget that. So just a few ideas to keep meetings running smoothly. And that's it for me. Those are the main questions.
Okay. Next thing in your packet, you'll find the 2024 annual report. I'm going to turn the time over to Lindsay, just to kind of give us high level, but I encourage you to take the time, to read this, read maybe what the other, committees have been doing, and it's just a reflection on what we've done, over the year, but I'll just let Lindsay kind of highlight a couple of things.
Thanks, Megan. And I wanted to thank, of course, Megan and Director Cameron and all the committee chairs for helping to compile this report and the full course to putting it all together into one document. So we appreciate all your contributions. As Megan said, this is just the highlight of all the activities that each of the committees have worked on over the year, which is July to June as a program year for the State Business Development Board. A couple of the highlights that we wanted to talk about today was the service project from last year. If you remember, we collected school supplies and we donated them to school districts across the state, and we have those listed there. Wonderful project, and we had a lot of great donations. And next year we'll be able to highlight the food bank project this year, so we're excited to do that as well. The other highlights I wanted to talk about was on the almost last page of the document about the highlights from the program year. Of course, the approval of the one-stop centers. We have the Trillo one-stop center, the Price one-stop, and Trillo overall recertifications from this year. And we also recertified our affiliate one-stop centers, which are the little offices that are tied to the bigger one-stop centers. The biggest accomplishment of the year, and I think we're all grateful it's done, is the approval of the Utah State WIOA plan that is combined for all of our great programs. It represents our plan for the next 4 years. So excited to have that approved, and we can continue to work on the great work as part of that plan. The great thing in this report, as well as our success stories, we have success stories from all of the programs that work under WIOA. And as Greg mentioned, they really highlight the coordination that we do our goals, referrals across programs, how we work together to meet needs of our customers. One of the stories I wanted to highlight today was a foster care youth that we have been working with for a few years. She was aging out of foster care. She was struggling in high school. She was about to drop out. She wasn't attending. She had really bad grades. She didn't have any family support at all. She was really having a hard time. She got connected with our WIOA youth program, who the counselor provided a lot of mentoring support for her, some coaching resources. Was really a family support to her, helped build her confidence level up. And over the years, she has now graduated high school. She's obtained her associate's degree in victim advocacy and her bachelor's degree in criminal justice. She has been working this summer as a law clerk as part of an internship for a local city, and she's doing a great job. She actually started law school about 2 months ago, which is fantastic. So this youth council really made a big difference for her, and really kind of wraparound services. We partnered with our Department of Health and Human Services, foster care services, and the transition to adult living services. It's another great example of making sure this individual was able to succeed in the best way possible, and it's a great story. And there's lots of wonderful stories here, and so I do encourage you to look through those. But we appreciate all of your hard work from the board, and we're excited for this year. So thank you.
I love that story. And that's like it's not like she graduated high school and started law school yesterday. I mean, that's a several years situation. So what a great story.
So take the time to take a look at the annual report. Next, Amy. Which I kind of feel like you had to pinch hit last time, now you're up here again. What's that about, guys, in the back?
It's called punishment.
Initiation.
Wow. I feel like the initiation period is never over. It's never over.
I feel like you should file a complete review. Thank you, Amy. Yeah. It's up to you. Go for it.
I'm hoping that this is the last time we hear from you for a while, even though I have really cool stuff to talk about today. I'm going to highlight a few of the really exciting things in here, but like the other annual report, I really encourage you to read everything that we've done with the course development and all of those stories highlighted. So we've been partnering to do a few job fairs, both virtual and in person. The first one being with Hella Air Force Base, and that was at the Clearfield Employment Center. They were able to hire on-site 16 positions with 44 job seekers that were qualified candidates for future vacancies that Hale Air Force Base were having. And then we partnered with Utah Valley Job Fair in August. 125 employers were represented, and 3,600 job seekers were in attendance. The next one I'm excited to talk about because we have been all hands on deck with Black Desert in St. George. So as many of you know, it's a golf course. It is culinary. It is party planning. It is going to be a giant hotel. But we've been working with them almost on a bi-weekly basis. Them and Utah Tech, we've been very involved with doing job fairs with them. So they, in July, they held a 2-day event. There were over 600 job seekers that showed up just for the fair, and they hired 200 on site, and they kept the list to continue, and they continued to hire over 100 people since that job fair that we were a part of. So that's something that we're all hands on deck. I'm not gonna lie, I consider going to work at a lot together. I'm kidding.
That's pretty fancy.
It is very fancy.
They also don't require board presentations.
They are hosting the One Utah Summit kickoff. I'm just saying.
Monday evening.
Monday night.
Greg, I'm a lifer, I promise.
This meeting will be recorded.
Moving on.
You're being disrupted. I'd like to.
Generally.
Okay, let's talk about Big D Construction. They have a custom fit plan that was developed to give the youth kind of a hands-on experience. They had over 12 youth placed on the Wasatch Front, and they replaced it between $21 and $24 an hour. So incredible work that they're doing. Let's talk about Candy Forest Products. This was, for those of you that don't know, this is a sawmill in Panguitch, Utah that recently caught fire. They lost one of their main mills. Fortunately enough, their main office building is off-site. There was about 30 displaced workers immediately, but we, in working with them, we were able to either help them with unemployment claims, but the majority of them were able to stay employed with the company doing admin jobs and everything. They actually had a very large piece of equipment that was hundreds of thousands of dollars that they recently purchased, and that was not in the fire. So we were very thankful for that, and they're working on getting that up and running as well. There is something I want to highlight, and I'm not doing this because he told me not to, but there was an award given to John Calcott in Mountain Land Service Area. So I'm actually going to read this part, and then I'll wrap it up. But the Spanish Workforce Services Office was honored with the prestigious Community Partner of the Quarter Award by the Spanish Work Chamber of Commerce, a recognition that underscores the exceptional contributions and commitment to the community. This accolade celebrates the office's unwavering dedication and impactful initiatives that have significantly enriched the lives of Utah residents. So kudos to Spanish Work Office.
Yay!
I just want to say, I got to be in a picture and all the certificates, but it was all the Spanish Work team. The partnership that we have.
So, well, I put us to the chamber for
recognition. Yes. Really
All right, just a couple quick things. Like I said, I want you to read through all of these. It's some incredible stuff. As far as Veterans and Military Employment Services, DWS partnered with the Veteran Readiness and Employment Program. They hosted a virtual event with 5 different employers that focused on IT and cybersecurity industry and getting the veterans placed in those jobs. Very cool. Apprenticeships. I really was excited about this one. It's really cool with Irontown Modular in Spanish Fork. So they did an on-site tour of their facilities and are getting new kind of involved with construction jobs and working in a manufacturing industry and getting them exposure to that. So last page is the what's next coming up. We have job fairs. Our next workforce services virtual job fair is November 7th. Apprenticeship Utah Summit and Job Fair in Sandy on the 19th. And then moving to December, there's a finance and banking industry spotlight for veterans at the virtual event. So read through all of those, and I hope you don't see me in January.
With that, I think we're going to hop over to pathway updates really quick. And get your pens ready. I know you have a lot in your packet, but just get ready for dates because it seems like there's just a lot going on in the fall all the time. So just get ready for dates coming on. So Lindsay, I'm going to have you report out on career pathways really quick and youth just because we had to excuse both of our committee chairs for that. Is that okay? All right, thank you.
So I'll start with the Career Pathways Committee. They have been working on developing a new career pathway for AmeriCorps participants. If you're not familiar with AmeriCorps, it was a program, federal program, where youth and other individuals are able to do service and earn a wage and kind of get experience in the community. And they do a lot of wonderful projects, and there's really amazing programs in Utah. I want to learn more about it. I want to send you more information. But it's been a goal of the governor and the AmeriCorps program federally to help build out pathways from these years of service. So instead of just having them complete their year of service, they help them move and transition into a pathway. So the Pathways Committee met with our AmeriCorps leaders from USERV to talk about how we can help develop the pathway programs. We're excited to talk about that over the next few months. And then for youth, we are working on what's going to be our plan for the next year. And so our chair, Matt Liu, challenged all the committee members to report back on what are our biggest challenges either as employers or as youth service providers and how can we better support those youth as a committee. The top item that we have seen so far is how do we build more worksite learning opportunities, how do we help employers know more about worksite learning opportunities, and how do we help increase different pathways and programs for youth to participate in those. So we will report back more in the future on all of those funds. So,
thank you so much. Let's do apprenticeship next because you have a lot.
All right, just kind of starting out, active apprentices is the highest it's ever been at 4,800, with 2,200 apprentices just this year. This is apprentices as a whole. I mean, of the Electrical Training Alliance, we've experienced a huge increase. We just reached over 1,000 applications just getting into our program, and we've accepted 280 so far this year. We're going to exceed 300 before the year's end.
Michael's hiring right now. If anybody's, you know, he's, and Scott, how's that new job going?
Okay,
good.
All right. Yeah, it's just been varying, which is good. Brings us up to 800 apprentices just alone in our apprenticeship. Kind of looking at that, just like statistics of the active registered apprentices and programs, so that represent a sixth of the whole state, you know, for all apprentices just in that electrical field. So, I mean, it's good to see those numbers keep going up. 705 have completed and 22 new apprenticeship programs added in total. There is the new the 2024 apprenticeship annual report that's been released. It can be found on the DWS website, as well as the Friendship Utah website and Boyer tab. One big thing that is good here is they solidified a location for the Apprenticeship Utah Summit Career Fair. Looks like they got a handout there in the packet there. So it's going to be November 19th at the Salt Line Productive Workplace. So with that, their nominations will be going, nomination forms will be going out on Monday. They're looking for nominations for outstanding sponsor, outstanding employer, outstanding apprentice, registered apprenticeship champion, and lifetime achievement award. So those individuals will be acknowledged at this summit, as well as holding a career fair at the same time that will be following this summit. So very exciting to see that coming out. Trying to see what else that I might have missed. Just we're seeing a huge growth and you know, trying to collaborate with high schools to career pathways of getting into apprenticeship programs with some great apprenticeship programs we're currently working on.
Thanks, Michael. I think what you'll also start to see for those of you working on your committees, in our executive committee, we talked about doing some more collaboration. We're starting to, we've talked for years about how, you know, apprenticeship and youth overlap and youth and career pathways overlap and apprenticeship and career pathways overlap and then bringing in, you know, how does that affect operations? How does that, affect, serving people with disabilities? And so, we'll probably start to see probably, I'm assuming January, we'll try and kick that off, but start to see maybe like the youth committee and the apprenticeship committee meeting together as a collective and doing some collaboration so that we're not, you know, duplicating efforts, but seeing how we can utilize the knowledge power. Because we've got, our committees are bigger than us. We've got a lot of people that sit on those committees that are on outside entities. See how we can try and collaborate some of those initiatives going on. So watch for that to happen. Starting in 2025 is probably my guess. Because we'll, instead of, and I'm not suggesting additional meetings, I'm just suggesting replacing, you know, if you have a standing, like, Career Pathways meeting that youth would be invited to that, and that would be the youth meeting. We'll do something like that. So, just watch for that to possibly happen. Thank you, Michael. Any questions about apprenticeships? There's a lot going on. November is a very exciting apprenticeship month. Okay.
I'll add one more thing. The National Apprenticeship Week is also released. They're going to be doing two career events during that week in November. So November 20th, there's going to be one at Utah State's Eastern in Price, and then another one at Southern Utah University in Cedar on the 21st. So those are during the National Apprenticeship Week.
Okay, excellent. Deanna, serving individuals with disabilities?
Yes, so on October 1st, we held our annual disability and it's a award ceremony kind of thing and a conference or summit held at Science Technology Building. It was a really, really good summit, and the topics there, what they do is they have like an educational breakout session portion in the morning. The afternoon, they held the Golden Key Awards, which is where they awarded five scholarships this year to individuals with disabilities, and they also acknowledge outstanding employers in the industry that are recruiting, retaining, and hiring people, individuals with disabilities. This is what threw me off, and I don't know, will you let me announce who the winners were, just real quick, so if you guys
want to
congratulate them. Mm-hmm. But Zion Jellystone Park was the Small Employer of the Year. Avis Car Rental was the Freedom Award winner, and the Freedom Award winner is one that does an exceptional job with veterans and military people. Avante was the Large Employer of the Year. Marissa Gray with UD Construction was the ACE Award. recipient. Columbus Community Center was the provider of the year. Roxanne Durchie with the Empowerment and Employment Services Lifetime Achievement Award. And Utah Department of Government Operations received the ASAP Award, and Capstone Nutrition was the Medium Employer of the Year. So those were the awards recipients this year. And it was a really wonderful conference, especially for employers that are here. If you will mark your calendar, they usually hold it around September, October every year. It's one that's really worth attending. It was just wonderful. Our keynote speaker this year was Jamie Mulcrazy. She was a world-class skier, competitor in the World Games or the X Games, and she sustained a traumatic brain injury. And it's her story of how she not only survived the injury, but she came back and she created her own foundation. And is an advocate for others who are recovering from traumatic brain injury. And then, well, some of the things that we have going on with our group are, first of all, I'm gonna go back one thing. We did have a name change that became official in October, and we are now the Utah Committee of Employed. Let's see.
It's still hard to say.
I know.
Utah Committee on the Employment of People with Disabilities.
Okay. And so as far as the business relations team, they're partnering with Disability in Utah, Goldman Sachs, for a 5K run, walk, and roll in Liberty Park on this Saturday, October 5th, 8 o'clock. So if any of you are interested and would like to get out and do those things, please feel free to join them. They also, the business relations team hosted the fall employment workshop on recruiting, hiring, and retaining individuals with disabilities on September 10th. They had 34 business partners who attended that event. And that is another event I would highly recommend. If you are an employer and you have not been to that, please get that on your calendar. They hold it in spring and fall every year. And they have the individual. You can read all this in here, and there's a lot of stuff. So I think I'm going to skip down and just go through key dates. But we went over the Golden Key Awards, and then yesterday they held a youth mentoring event in Morgan Stanley. And October 5th, this Saturday is the walk run. October 8th, we'll be holding the fall workability career fair and registration. We'll be opening soon if you're not registered. There's links on there to get on there if you're interested or if you're a job seeker. October 15th, they will be doing the youth mentoring event.
You know, all these flyers. They're all in your packet, either online or in your folder.
And this is Leah. Can I just let you guys know that the videos are up on the website under employer information on the USOR side of the DWS site. So you can watch all the award winner videos there.
They're the best part.
Yeah, they're very good.
Yeah. Yes. So I did want to also add that in addition to Apprenticeship Week and whatever else it is this month, we have National Disability Employment Awareness Month. I get it right? Okay. And so the governor did actually sign a declaration celebrating that month, and it's really short, so I'm just going to read it because you'll never read it if you get it. Whereas people with disabilities provide a wealth of knowledge, skills, talent, interests and experiences that add tremendous resourcefulness and creative energy to Utah's workforce. Whereas workplaces welcoming all talented and capable people, including people with disabilities, are a critical part of our efforts to build strong communities. And now I can't read it. And a prosperous economy. Whereas helping Utahns with disabilities obtain meaningful employment and increased independence is the mission of the Utah State Office of Rehabilitation. Whereas the enduring success of our office is due to the motivation of its clients, tireless efforts of its staff, and support for the community. And whereas we wish to raise awareness about the employment for people with disabilities and celebrate the many and varied contributions of people with disabilities, we declare October 2024 as Disability Employment Awareness Month. And I have to say, we didn't need that little kudos in there. I mean, really, our whole
intent is to really help individuals with disabilities find employment, and that's what this committee is about, and that's what everyone in this room is about. So thank you for your ongoing support.
Yay. And Greg has something else he wants to add.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I don't have a picture to show. Actually, I do. I can give that. Amy called this out, and she asked you to read it, and I'm just going to echo that. And one of the articles in here, it's after the fact, but the Utah Center for Assistive Technology held an open house right around Labor Day. It's a fantastic event that occurs this year. And unfortunately, it appears... Bless you. Leah is fantastic. You've ever met, you know, the Energizer Bunny that she is. But one of the things that she makes very, very clear to employers, assistive technology need not be something so expansive. It's about educating employers about resources, big and small alike, that can help an individual with a disability enter into employment or maintain employment. But some of the assistive technology is just incredible. The picture that you see here, for example, is... So the individual here is, I'm going to probably butcher this, what looks like he's playing a video game, but what he's really doing is he's getting resistance on the steering wheel. It's pushing back on him so that the gentleman you see to his left is able to assess the type of individualized assistive technology that he can help construct for a steering wheel. For example, for an individual so that they can self-drive. So it's incredible. It's everything from that to translation software. We have an individual place there who can help provide additional information. We had Jolene Weiler here, but they can provide information about ABLE accounts, you know, savings accounts, so that we can build up.
We love ABLE. We talked about it.
Absolutely. So I just this is a great resource, and as Sarah said, October is a highlighted month with a declaration, but these services go on year round. Our staff are fantastic. I know we were talking about workforce development earlier, but Leah and our staff with the Utah State Office of Rehabilitation deserve the same amount of praise. I'm very proud of them, and this is a really, really cool event. So next July, we shove 900 flyers in your folder, and we say, hey, in September, this is coming. Strongly encourage you. Open entry, open exit. Come anytime you want, but you'll be amazed at just some of the technology that's out there. Eyesight communication for individuals. You just look at things, and it now reads where your eyes are going, so it can communicate for you.
And it isn't just for VR clients. There is, of course, we work a lot with public education around the state, but there are special ed teams who need access to different resources. We'll go out and train and provide information on those. And also members of the public. They don't know about us a lot, but there are times when we can consult and provide different assistive technology for them. So it's a good resource.
And we're happy to do tours at UCAT at any time to see the different technologies and devices. It's a really good opportunity for HR professionals to learn about the emerging devices and systems that employees need their appointment.
I think we should a meeting there someday.
We should, because we did a meeting at the Division of Services for the Blind and Visually Impaired. We've done that twice, and it's still one of my favorite experiences.
This would be...
So we try and do... We try and do a field trip in April. So maybe April.
Sign for delegation, just so you know, is this.
Oh,
that's
got it.
American Sign Language.
April, you just did. Okay, great, thank you. Operation?
Sure, we got a quick update today. We already talked about the certifications, Clearfield, South County. And the one coming up at Metro on 13th in November. If you'd like to be interested in that one, do it. Talk to Ken. He'll get you on the list for that. Second thing is the operations committee also looked at the certification criteria. I think some of you have been around a while. We went from 24 and then down a little bit. We're down about 19 or so pieces. And we feel that that's pretty good for where that is. So recommendation is just to keep that there. We'll see what other modifications need to be as we move forward for that. And then the third one is, in January, we're going to do a thing here at the board. Some of you recall several years ago, we did a piece on the employer survey. We put a QR code up, a link, asked everybody to take it. Megan's going to make some time available for us to do that again in January for everybody in the room to take the employer survey. And then Megan has a challenge.
That's right. You can tell them what I'm going to make them do. Very nicely ask them to do. Mm-hmm. So we're just having a little, we get bombarded with surveys all the time in our email, I know, especially when they come from organizations. But we really need the data. And I remember when we first put the employer survey out, we were getting some good data. It started to trickle off. And then we get a little influx because somebody here has helped push it somehow. So what I'd like to do is have the board take the survey in January. And then I'm going to ask that we probably each take just 5 minutes. We'll just pause. And I'm going to ask you to forward the link to like 3 colleagues that are not in your organization and other organizations. And they're in Utah, and ask them to please fill out the survey. I do think my colleague Christy, you know, at GAF, they manufacture roofing for, you know, like the New Orleans Saints Stadium. Like, they do really cool stuff, but she's busy. But if I ask her, hey, Christy, I really need this data for one of our boards. Could you please fill out this survey for me? It takes you 5 minutes. I think we'll get more responses. So I'd really like us to do that. So come prepared with, you know, 3 to 5 names. And you could kick out to people that are not in your same company. And just individually, I think if you get a personal invitation from somebody you have a good relationship with in your community, they're more likely to respond. So let's see if we can boost those numbers a little bit.
Or we could do it like one of our board members did, the 12 of their employees.
Yeah, oh, and then I'm going to ask you to ask them like a chain email. I mean, that would be great, but, you know, there's no...
Come back around, right?
If you don't forward it, but just, I think a personal invitation from some of our, you know, people within our own personal network might help us get some numbers.
That's all.
So,
Kim, do we have anything else?
Awesome. We will be asked to vote, I believe, on the criteria, though, in January.
Yes.
So that will come as well.
So join, so we have a quorum.
So fine, I have a quorum. I can vote. Thank you. And do it the right way. So just really quick, the apprenticeship, there's just a mention, make sure if there's anybody you want to nominate for those apprenticeship awards, I think we'll send information out about that as well so that you can get those out. And any more updates on, are we good on the service project? Are we ready to close it out?
Yeah.
Okay. Service project is done. So with that, next meeting, right now it was January 9th. Just remember, January's and October's meetings can sometimes move, depending on what's up down south and the summit. Right now, what's up down south is on the 9th. I have in place to just hold our meeting, but Liz is going to check. So plan on the 9th, but just know that January 9th, that's probably going to be our next meeting. If we push it too far out, it'll be in the session, and nobody wants that. So probably it'll be the 9th. So just make a note of that. And then you do have an update calendar in your packet for upcoming meetings. Just get those kind of blocked out for you. And with that, I need a motion to adjourn. Okay, good, Sarah, because everybody wanted to stay.
They may know.
Awesome. So, you see, say motion to adjourn. That's what you think. So we do. Yay. Done.